Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
Okay.
Here we go.
Nothing to be nervous about.
But we go out for Mexican after this.
Oh, we're great. Is that ever for real or no?
Yeah.
No, it's for real.
Oh, good.
No.
Well, if you have the time.
Am I coming?
Don't you think we would say this in front of you and then...
I don't know. I just
found out you like Mexican, and I was like, Melissa.
Oh, I love Mexican. Usually,
it's sort of become a meme, after podcasting, we go out for Mexican, which isn't always true.
No.
But...
we haven't done it in a really long time.
It's statistically more probable than not, but...
Great.
We miss it, so it'd be nice to
all about
do it again.
Yeah.
Do you have anything planned after this?
I don't think so. I think I'm free until
1:45. He's like, I'm a seminarian.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I have very little responsibility. That's one of the nice things about being a seminarian. Let's see. Podcast.
Do you have your email on the back of your phone?
Yes.
Just in case?
Yeah, I'm kind of old school. It saved me.
Just in case you forget it? Or
well, you were there when Barbara came by. And
Barbara has saved more than one life when it comes to things left in the church. So.
Yeah, I'm free.
Yeah. Yeah, let me check my schedule. Nothing going on.
Could probably squeeze you guys in for lunch.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Have you ever been to Milipita?
No.
Or have you been to Charo?
No.
Okay. Did you go to the Meadlers this weekend?
I did. We had Mission Taco.
Mission Taco.
Oh, wow.
I was wondering because I knew she
was. That's not Mexican, is it?
It's kind of like Mexican.
It's like American tacos, though.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm sure it's delicious.
Do you have high standards when it comes to your diet?
No, definitely not.
You thought she was going with Mexican. Do you have high standards with your Mexican? You're like, yes.
I've actually only ever seen you consume beer and ice cream, I think.
Okay.
So I don't know.
And root beer.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, for Mexican, there's three criteria on which you judge the Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
One is the quality of the guacamole.
Okay.
The second is their house, chips, and salsa. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Quality and quantity.
Quantity, wow.
And then third is the margarita.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there are Mexican restaurants that nail all three, but as long as they get one of them, I'm all in.
I'm all in. Okay, great. Well, we can figure that out later. We were deciding on as to whether or not we should even share that little secret with you that we do Mexican after the podcast, but...
I think we do.
You're in.
We do.
So...
That's our breaking bread.
Right.
It's over chips and salsa.
Perfect.
Right. Well, welcome back to The Catholic Arsonist. Today we have a very special guest with us. This is his first time on a podcast, right?
That's right.
That's right. First time on a podcast. Ooh. And so we have Joe Martin, the seminarian that's assigned to St. Clair this year. And we can't wait to get to know you and share you with the parish.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes. Good. Yeah, Shane is also here. We kicked off the priests and brought in a... non-ordained caller to be with us. So I feel kind of bad because the past sort of 2 or 3 weeks we've been telling people Joe's coming, and we didn't speak to you about that until I think last week. Mm-hmm. But thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was hoping to be able to come talk to you guys, and like I said earlier, the podcast was a great way to get to know the parish early on. So, yeah, I feel like there's a relationship already in place.
Good.
Yep.
Joe was telling us, what was that last week? He said to us that this is a pretty serious podcast. It sounds professional and it's done really well. And Shane and I were like, what are you talking about? Which I'm grateful for because it makes us feel good about the work that we do. But at the same time, if you could be in the room with us, you see like the shenanigans that take place in here and all the conversations that get edited out and everything. So, but, good. Okay. So we are here to get to know Joe. Yeah. So, why don't you tell us sort of who you are in the sense of what you're doing at our parish? Why are you with us this year instead of at the seminary?
For sure. Thanks, Alyssa. I would say, halfway through the seminary, they send you to a parish to work for a year. It's a great way to learn how to discern the priesthood by the means of living in a real parish where you're encountering real people, walking with them and accompanying them. In the seminary, that's limited because it's it's not an artificial environment, but it's a very unique environment. Mm-hmm. It's heavy on academics. It's heavy on human formation. But to be sent out to a parish after several years of seminary formation really gives seminarians the opportunity to apply what they've learned and then have a longer time period to grow in relationship with the people. And I think that's where real discernment can really happen, is in relationships and especially pastoral formation. I think it's essential for pastoral formation to walk with people in their day-to-day lives. So that's what I'm so excited to do here. And so I'm so grateful to be at St. Clair's.
I like how they put it halfway through, because, you know, like you just said, you're going through all this studying and everything. You're like, what am I doing this for? And they're like, hey, here's some sunshine. Go out and
some sunshine.
See how real life is.
Right.
And then, yeah, like you said, that's a good discernment point for you. Like, mm-hmm. okay, this is what I want to do, or this is not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then you have that time to figure it out and keep discerning. But
yeah,
I think they did it right in the middle for a reason.
Yes. It's helpful.
Is it something that every seminarian is required to do, or how do they, maybe this is too much information, but how do they decide who gets to do it, or is it a requirement?
It varies by your diocese that you're from and okay. what the bishop asks of his seminarians who are training for the priesthood. In St. Louis, it's basically a hard and fast rule that every seminarian who's studying for the Archdiocese of St. Louis would at some point take this pastoral year, this internship year, and be sent out to a parish. Okay. So for me, I'm part of a class of four guys, Jeff Fenewald, Joe Esserman, Rob Lawson, and myself. And mm-hmm. we right now are basically all over the diocese. Rob is down in St. Genevieve with Father Nemeth. Jeff is in Imperial with Father Shaughnessy. Mm-hmm. Joe is out in Washington with Father Phoebe. And I'm here at St. Clair's with Father Yates. And, you know, there's 200-something parishes in the Archdiocese, and four pastors were chosen to train seminarians for this year. Hmm. So it's a big vote of confidence in Father Yates that the Archbishop asked him to do this.
Incredible. I remember last year when we found out we were getting Deacon Charlie, well, not Father Charlie, but then Deacon Charlie, it was like Christmas. We were like, we get another one like for the whole year, not just on Sundays, you know? So it was sort of the same thing when we heard we were getting Joe. Mm-hmm. It was like, yes, another person to help out and be on board with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how I felt when I heard I was coming. First, I knew I was going to be with Father Yates, and then I got the surprise announcement that we were not going to be at St. Francis, we're going to be at St. Clair, and that was even more good news. So
that was actually one of our questions on here. We wanted to know your thoughts initially. So did you know about this parish before coming here or being assigned here?
I did. My grandma on my mom's side, when she moved to Ellisville in the early 90s and was a parishioner of St. Clair's ever since, from early 90s until 2017 when she died, and she loved it here. She would hit the 6:30 a.m. Mass every single Sunday.
It's hardcore.
She had her own spot in the pew. She and her husband, Glenn, my grandpa died before I was born, and she remarried, and Glenn and grandma were a staple at the 6:30 Mass, and then they would go and hit Lee's Chicken or Burger King afterwards, depending on how they're feeling.
Cool. So that was your, you had grown up going to Mass here sometimes or no?
I did, yes. In fact, when my grandma could no longer drive, it was a weekly tradition. one of us who was at home, one of seven siblings, we would come out here to Ellisville, pick grandma up, go to the 5 p.m. Saturday Mass, and then get Chick-fil-A afterwards and usually bring it back to her place and have dinner. And those were great memories of my grandma in her last years. Mm-hmm. So.
How beautiful.
Oh.
I think that might be a fun tradition to start for me. Yeah. Chick-fil-A after Saturday evening Mass.
You can't do it on Sunday, so
that's
it's got to
right.
be Saturday.
That's right. Wow.
That's awesome.
So when you heard you were coming back here, were you like, this is totally the hand of the Lord, like bringing me back to a place that I know? Or was it, you had heard good things about Father Yates, or did you know some of the stuff we had going on as a parish, or what was that season like where you hadn't yet arrived here, but you knew you were coming here?
Right.
Lots of research.
Yeah. Well, Father Charlie immediately pulled me aside and told me how excited he was that I was coming here. I knew that he had done great things with the youth group, with Seek 21, with Father Martin. Father Charlie was, during lockdown, he was so anxious to be here rather than at the seminary, partially because being locked down at the seminary is not fun, but I think right. really he loved St. Clair of Assisi. Wow. And that was infectious when I found out I was coming here, and his enthusiasm when I encountered that was really infectious.
Cool. I like that.
So good to hear.
It is good to hear. Yeah. Okay, cool. So you're in your fifth year of formation, right?
That's right.
Class of four, you said. Tell us how you got to this point, sort of in your discernment. And that's sort of a broad topic, but like what has led you to even enter the seminary and then to continue for 5 years now? You shared a little bit with myself and the core team, but just for mm-hmm. Shannon and the parishioners, like what has led you to this point in your vocation and your discernment?
Well, ultimately Jesus has led me here. I say that, and it's the truest thing I could say, because when I had the chance this past summer on the 30 day to look back over the years of formation and the years of my life, it became so crystal clear that if God wants me to be a priest, it's going to be completely his doing. He's been leading me the whole way. And even when I thought I was in control and I thought I was making my own way, that got blown up. and it has to continue to be dismantled each day. Sure. It's a temptation that I have, being a guy and coming from my family and with my personality. I love the idea of, you know, cutting my own trail, etc. But that is inimical to the priesthood, because the priesthood belongs to Jesus. So mm-hmm. to the extent that it's me working, it's going to only get in his way. So that has been kind of the battle these years of formation, and really before formation as well, setting aside my own plans and letting God work in a place of freedom where I can just be open to his will. Mm.
Jesus has led him here. Oh, good. You tell the folks how you grew up.
Sure. I had a really blessed upbringing. I grew up in a big family. There's seven Martin kids. I'm number five of the seven. Tom, Katie, Rob, Michael, Joe, Claire, and Jeffrey. There's girls.
There's a Claire in there.
Yeah, there's a Claire. In fact, she looks just like the statue of St. Clair of Assisi. I'll try to show you a picture after the podcast, but I think about my sister Claire every time I go by that. She is married now to a great guy, Daniel Carter.
Francis? Oh, okay. Yeah.
No, a different guy, yeah. I think you may have gone to high school with him, Melissa, but...
Dan Carter?
That's right, yeah.
You're lying to me.
No, Claire and Dan. Yeah, Claire Carter. So, big shout out to those two.
Wow. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that.
In any case... we had a really blessed upbringing. My parents early on decided to experiment with homeschooling, and then they ran with it for like 15 years. So I was homeschooled K through 12. And during those years, mom and dad were extremely encouraging, but also not too encouraging for me to explore the priesthood. I think they saw early signs, maybe the way I was in mass, my openness to the faith and prayer. They just saw early signs that, you know, maybe Joe's being called to the priesthood. And they did a great job of fostering that without suffocating it. Mm-hmm. And also they gave me their example, which was they were present, they were loving, they sacrificed for us, and then they brought us to communion as often as they could, every Sunday and during the week as well. My mom would knock on the door in the morning and try to get us out of bed for Mass. Sometimes we made it, sometimes we didn't. But those examples from fatherhood and motherhood now just come back to me all the time when I'm discerning spiritual fatherhood. Mm. And so I'm really grateful for my parents for what they provided me early on.
Yeah. I love that the experiment of homeschool turned into 15 years of education.
Yeah. There's a funny story. My oldest brother, Rob, when he was at a Catholic school that will remain nameless, he was in first grade, and my grandma, who was the parishioner here at St. Clair's that we talked about earlier, she put a paring knife into his lunchbox so he could peel his apple. And I don't know why she thought maybe that was a good idea in first grade, but my brother, first day at lunch, pulls out this paring knife and is just grinning, holding a knife in the lunchroom. And he gets suspended for 2 days, I think. That's at least that's the family legend. And so he gets suspended for 2 days. My parents are upset, and this is like one episode in a list of many others. But then my grandma lost her favorite paring knife, so she called the school, went to the principal's office, drove there, picked up the paring knife, and came home. And then a short while after that, we started homeschooling. So that's kind of the, I don't know, a funny episode in the story.
That cannot be the reason you all started homeschooling, though, right?
No, I don't think so. My parents felt called to do it. Okay. They weren't at peace with the schools that they had looked at. They mm-hmm. felt capable of doing it. And when it was all said and done, they just said, well, we can try and see if it's what God wants for us. Mm-hmm. And so after a lot of prayer and in discussion with their pastor, they set out, and they had a lot of support, again, from relatives. But they also had a lot of naysayers, people who were just sort of skeptical. Back then, homeschooling was a freak thing. And today it's much more mainstream, especially after COVID. Mm-hmm. And with the advent of the internet and so many educational resources online. Mm-hmm. Back then, though, it was still very much off the beaten path. But my parents just dove in, and they used what they had from their own education to help us. They brought in like retired teachers and friends that they knew who would help us with different subjects. Like, my mom knew that math and Latin were not her strong points. And the teachers didn't mind, because they would come to the house and there would be like five or six kids that would cycle through. So it made it efficient for them. So there were economies of scale in place that make homeschooling a big family more worthwhile. But at the end of the day, I think the main reason mom and dad wanted to do it, because they felt really called that they were the primary educators of their kids. Mm-hmm. And that's something Pope John Paul II said in 1981, which was the year my parents got married. He released a document that was really formative for them. It was called Familiaris Consortio on the Christian Family. My parents read that, and they also found other families that were homeschooling. They found an online distance learning program called Seton Home Study that was out of Virginia. It's mm-hmm. part of Christendom College. And when it all came together, they thought, we can do this, and God's going to help us. And if it doesn't work out, we'll go from there. Mm-hmm. And thanks be to God, I was homeschooled all the way through grade 12. And at the time, it was awkward. I didn't always like it. But as the years go by, I'm more and more grateful. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome. So what were your parents' background?
How does one be able to homeschool?
Yeah.
Like, so were they like engineers or right. like...
So my parents were physicians. My dad's retired and my mom is still practicing. They met in medical school, and my mom made the decision pretty early on that she was going to go part-time and wow. make homeschooling a priority. And her specialty is dermatology, which is one of those professions that allow more flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not as many emergencies. There's not as many. Sure. You can kind of schedule things with more freedom. But they thought based on that factored into their personal discernment, and they figured out a way to make it work. So
wow, did wow. she choose that specialty so as to be able to homeschool potentially, or was that just sort of like the way that the cards fell?
I think she chose it to have a little more ability to maintain
family life. Mm, how beautiful.
So mm-hmm.
wow. So then, who stayed at home with you? Was it your mom?
That was my mom.
Your mom. Yeah. Okay. You interested in that, Shayna?
I'm actually a teacher, and I'm like, oh, I can never teach my own kids. I love them. But I think it takes a special person.
Yeah. Well, at least to do it full-time in the sense that your parents did.
Right.
It is beautiful, the notion, though, that like the parents are the primary educator. We say that so often in the church, but then to have it taken by the reins so readily by your family, that's really a beautiful witness, I think.
Well, something that that struck me when I got to the seminary is mm-hmm. the diversity of the backgrounds of the guys that are there. I grew up and my parents were very enthusiastic about homeschooling, but I know that now, that looking back, it wasn't perfect. There was messiness in our family. We had to struggle through. And when I see now the guys in St. Louis who are studying for the priesthood, there's incredible diversity from mm-hmm. Catholic schools, public schools, homeschooling, and God worked in each of their stories in amazing ways. And so that gives me the confidence to say to parents who ask, to pray first, to consult with their pastor, and to really take time to discern it, because it is not for everyone. It's not mm-hmm. a magic bullet. But for those who are called, who are able to do it, and I think it's an amazing it's one sign of generosity that is really inspiring. So mm.
that is beautiful. Shana asked a good question earlier before you came in here. She was wondering, and you sort of mentioned like the Seton method, or I don't know what it's called, Seton Hall or something.
Yeah.
What, and not just like normal school subjects, but what did specifically faith formation look like for you growing up? Was religion or theology like a course that you would take? I don't even know if I'm using the right words, because
intertwined into everything.
Yeah. Or? Was it just like, yeah, we pray the rosary in the morning and that's our, like, how did it go?
My mom was always looking for opportunities, and some, we were oftentimes kind of begrudgingly when it came to things like the rosary or things like daily mass. But she did. She would take the book of the liturgical year out and make note of the saint of the day, and we would learn their story. Similar things to what happened at St. Clair's when I've been there in the mornings.
Hmm.
She also got us in the habit of praying the Angelus at noon, wow, which is a beautiful way to mark the day. And then in the evenings, that would be usually when we would pray the rosary. We were not 100% with that. I think my mom and dad would have, looking back, would have... if they could do it over again, would have really tried to make the daily rosary more of a thing. But when we did, it was powerful, and it was a way for, you know, each child could pray a decade and mm-hmm. meditate on the mystery. But faith formation was, it was consistently, my mom leading and my dad, supporting. And then on Sundays when my dad was home, it was him leading for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that he would be in the driver's seat going to Sunday mass. And I remember him giving us lessons and formation and
oh, wow.
talking afterwards about the homily. And yeah, they had a great team approach to it. So
that's exciting.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Teamwork makes seminarians. That's what teamwork
that
makes.
Too. That too.
So none of your other siblings have discerned religious life or the priesthood?
Not that I know of. There are, they've discerned it, but they've ended up getting married,
sure,
at least the ones so far that have chosen a vocation.
Sure.
I have two brothers that are unmarried, and who knows? We'll see.
Okay.
One is probably going to be engaged soon. The other is just graduated college, and is, I think he's definitely discerning and definitely open to the Lord's call, which I'm really proud of him for that.
Beautiful. Cool. Okay. So, stepping aside from the homeschooling, okay, this is like such an enigma to me, because like you said, growing up, it was always like, this sounds bad, but families that are afraid of things do homeschooling, you know, which I don't think that's the case here, but that's sort of my image of it. So I always want to hear about the homeschooling. But we want to know sort of throughout your life, or at least in these sort of like more mature seasons of discernment, who has been sort of influential, and we were thinking more along the lines of like saints or holy people, but if there are
actual
like people here present today that mm-hmm. you've been influenced by, we want to hear that too. But any sort of saint or spirituality or something that you've really clung to that's been offered clarity or anything for your discernment?
Oh, that is a great question. I think for those discerning diocesan priesthood, especially the liturgy, including Mass, but also a lot of people don't realize that the liturgy of the church includes the liturgy of the hours, mm-hmm. which is the church's consecration of time. That goes back to the very beginning, and it's based off of the Jewish cycle of prayers with the Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
So the liturgy of the hours brings the church together in consecrating time. That's been huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most beautiful things at the seminary is our morning and evening gatherings in the chapel to pray the liturgy of the hours. So there's the office of readings each day. There's morning prayer, daytime prayer, evening prayer, and nighttime prayer or complin. For me, that is probably the thing that I've relied on the most. There is time in our modern culture is like the thing that is probably the most difficult to give up. You know, being able to waste time with a person, I think, is one of the greatest gifts that you can give them.
Yeah.
And in the culture, there's an emphasis on rush and the hustle and haste. And what are some of the other words that are used? Like, and it's, I mean, it's good to work hard and be diligent and industrious, et cetera. But at the end of the day, we're human beings and we are wired for connection, and God mm-hmm. made us that way. Mm-hmm. And to treat another person as an end and not a means means wasting time with them. Mm-hmm. So the Liturgy of the Hours is awesome, because no matter what you're doing during the day, there's a call to drop it and enter into a prayer that's happening worldwide with everyone who's praying. Mm-hmm. Priests and clergy and religious are required by their vows to pray the Liturgy of the Hours. And for those that don't know, it includes a hymn, a set of psalms, a reading from scripture, a responsorial refrain, and then petitions, and then closes with the Our Father. And then in morning and the evening time, there are there's the prayers from the Gospels. In the morning, it's the Canticle of Zechariah, and in the evening, it's the Canticle of Mary's, the Magnificat. Mm-hmm. And it is an incredible anchor to my day. It has, and many times, I've just had this experience where...
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all totally fine. It's like, well, when you read the readings at Mass, there'll be times when you're going through something, and it just hits right where you need it. It's like medicine in the wound, the church's, the church's readings that they've given to us. And it's the same way, but even more particular for the Liturgy of the Hours. So for example, there's been times where I've had rough days at the seminary, and it's kind of the doldrums, and you feel kind of stuck and have cabin fever. Mm-hmm. And there's a line in Psalm 16 that says, "The lot marked out for me is my delight. Welcome indeed the heritage that falls to me." And it's the refrain that is prayed at priestly ordinations. And at the seminary, we have this enclosure. And every day when I would walk across this courtyard from point A to point B, that refrain would just come into my mind. And every single Thursday night at Compline, and before you go to bed, that's the psalm that the church presents to priests and religious and seminarians to pray. And that's how it's been for centuries. And I if you ask me about a devotion or a spirituality, it would probably be the breviary number one.
Yeah. It is truly beautiful. So even just praying the psalms, like, it's an ancient prayer. And so that aspect of participating in prayer that's happening at all times, but also that has been happening for all times, like throughout history. I was thinking about this morning. I recently moved, and so my morning routine has been changed a little bit. And I would normally start my day with morning prayer and the office. But I haven't gotten into a schedule of doing that since I've moved, and my commute has changed. But long story short, I really felt after Mass today, like, this desire to pray the office of readings. And I got to the second reading, and it was clear. It was like, there's something within the second reading that the Lord was wishing to share with me. And the second reading today is straight, like, "Blush then, you lazy and complaining servants." And I'm like, good. This, thank you, Lord. Like, thank you for this. This is a good check. But it does speak to you. So
it's awesome. And I think the fact that more and more lay people are turning to the breviary, to the office of readings, or any individual part of it. You know, moms and dads sometimes before they go to bed will pray Compline. You'll have people in the morning or the evening or whatever time of day just taking a piece of it. I think that's amazing that it's growing and that people mm-hmm. are turning to it.
Yeah. Do you have favorite saints or devotions to saints?
Yes. One saint that was powerful for me in college, I had to, moving away from home, the external structures of the faith were gone. And it was a 4-year moment of truth for me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
Basically, do I believe these things, not just intellectually, but from the heart? And am I willing to take the small steps of conversion each day, those baby steps? And a saint that was an amazing inspiration to me at the point of that reversion, if you will, was St. Edmund Campion. Hmm. He's an English martyr that died in 1582, I think. But he was killed by Queen Elizabeth I for being a Jesuit priest undercover when it was illegal to practice the faith, and it was absolutely forbidden under pain of death to be a priest ministering to Catholics in England at that time. He had been a luminary, a incredibly accomplished and brilliant student. He had audiences with Queen Elizabeth herself when he was a teacher at Oxford at an incredibly young age. He just had this dazzling career in front of him. And little by little, there was this voice that he was listening to that said, something isn't right. The country that is giving, that is promising you everything is abandoning the faith on which it stands. And what are you going to do? And he left, first went to Ireland, and then realized he was called to the priesthood, and then went to the diocesan seminary first, and then out of a desire for even more sacrifice, joined the Jesuits, which was just getting started. It had started maybe 40 years before when St. Ignatius of Loyola founded it. So he started with the Jesuits, and it was at a time when they had no idea where they would get sent. But in the Jesuit seminary in Rome, everyone was secretly praying to be sent to England because that's where you would have the glory of martyrdom most assured. And at first he wasn't sent there. He was sent to Austria to teach. And there's letters of him just pouring himself out into the, teaching these students. And it's sort of an everyday career. And he's writes letters to, back home afterwards saying, you know, when you're washing the dishes, rejoice, you know, oh, blessed pots and pans. All you guys that are in the kitchen scrubbing dishes, you're building up the kingdom of God. And then he gets word that he's going to England. And it's there that he has this incredibly exciting 2 or 3 years of ministry where there's these narrow escapes. And then finally, he realizes he's about to be caught. The noose is tightening. And he writes his famous brag, the brag of St. Edmund Campion. And the lines from that are what really struck me as a college student, because I was walking through SLU's library. I went to the SLU University for college, and I saw this novel of Edmund Campion that was written by Evelyn Waugh, and I pulled it off the shelf. I remember a priest had recommended it to me earlier, and it just jumped off the shelf to me. And then I saw the priesthood as something exciting, as something beautiful, as something courageous, and not not just, you know, some sort of like fallback option, like, oh, the church needs priests. No, God calls people, and they are unqualified, and he helps them through his mercy to serve him as priests. And that book was powerful. And then the words that we have from St. Edmund in English, because he's an English-speaking saint, that was powerful too. And then finally he's caught, they try him, bring false witnesses. And in those days in Elizabethan England, if you were convicted of treason, it was being drawn, being hung, and being quartered. It was not pleasant. But he faced it down, and now he's one of the glories of the Jesuits. That was a saint in to a 21-year-old guy. That was a saint who was really inspiring. In seminary, though, in the everyday ordinariness of living with guys and trying to grow closer to Jesus, it's Saint Therese of Lisieux, who I think, if you ask most guys, who really speaks to them and who they're really in love with, and who is someone that they just feel is covering them and her patronage, it's got to be Saint Therese. Her story and her just few short years of life, I think, are the. In fact, there's a seminarian, now a priest, Father Jack Ruzica, who wrote his thesis on how the little way of Saint Therese, the simple offerings to God of just the most ordinary of all things in daily life, how that is the best formation for seminarians and priests. How this obscure Carmelite nun who dies at 24 from tuberculosis. That's the saint that priests and seminarians should rely on the most. He wrote a whole thesis on it, and I admire him so much for that.
Therese has no chill. She really, like, she's just there for everyone all the time. She's beautiful too. That story of Edmund Campion, I've known a little bit about him, but I can see why, as a young man, that would be like a life that you would want to emulate. Like, he has all the same desires that I think every man has, like to be valiant and courageous and to sacrifice their lives for another, you know. That's really beautiful. I'm curious, you said silent retreats had a lot to do with your discernment. Did Ignatius, or I guess the Rules for Discernment, did that, is that something you had been formed in growing up, or was that something you had come to sort of understand later on?
That was understood later on.
Okay.
Early on, my parents were, they emphasized the devotional life, the mm-hmm. rosary, the mass. That's what they had grown up with, and that's what they knew, or at least my mom. My dad was a convert. That's what my mom had grown up with. But when I was discerning the priesthood and appropriating the faith for myself, it became very necessary to engage those rules for discernment that mm-hmm. Ignatius has given to the church.
Nice.
Yeah.
You had, I not that I wouldn't think seminarians are familiar with them, but just in speaking with you in passing, you had mentioned conversations bringing up peace or anxiety or something. I was like, he's speaking in Ignatian terms.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a powerful method of discerning the different voices that we hear, sure. Whether it's God, whether it's the evil one, or whether it's ourself. Mm-hmm. Ignatius, his great gift to the church was these simple rules that are mm-hmm. that are very concise, very practical, and yet so powerful and so versatile. And to this day, I would say that spirituality at Kenrick, I would say, is very faithful to the original spirituality of St. Ignatius.
Sure.
So can you quickly, like, tell us what the rules are?
Sure.
For people that...
Give us all 14 right now.
Sure.
I mean, I'm just kidding. You don't have to.
Well, I
just
think...
Like an overview.
I think it would be like a super worthwhile Google search to just find a PDF and print it off. I mean, that's what they told us to do, and just put it on your door. There are 14 short, concise rules that Ignatius gives to his first to his seminarians, but then since then the popes have promulgated them and recommended them to the whole church. But he basically says, when you're in certain situations and when you're being beset by certain difficulties, we have to resist our natural inclinations many times, and we have to be very have to have presence of mind, and we have to turn to the Lord in special ways. And he gives 14 different rules. There are rules that are sometimes have analogies from day-to-day life. They want, for example, rule 5 is when you're in a time of desolation, when you feel that God has somehow abandoned you, or and you've lost the consolations that you've experienced in the past from prayer or from sacrifice. He says, when you're in that time of desolation, never make a change. Don't change course or make sudden decisions. He says, when you feel that desolation, turn with a fresh urgency to the Lord and resist the temptation to spiral down. I mean, that one rule would make, you know,
Rule 5 saves lives.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly, Alyssa. But that's just one, that's probably the most famous of the rules.
Yeah.
But he gives us these, and I would caution against maybe reading them without any sort of introduction or any sort of context. Because Ignatius is writing in a certain time and a certain place, and he has something in mind. There's an amazing book, though, by Father Timothy Gallagher called, it's simply called The Discernment of Spirits. It's a simple paperback, but it's brilliantly done, and I would recommend that without hesitation to any Catholic who's interested.
Hmm. Very nice. Very nice. Cool. Okay, back to you. We have a little bit of time left. In terms of your discernment, your desire, or maybe not desire, but yeah, recognition of potentially like a priestly heart that the Lord has given you. What is something that you are passionate about in terms of becoming a priest? Like, if you are to be ordained, like, please God, there will be, that you bring an element of your own human personality into that. Mm-hmm. And we were thinking about this because, I mean, Father Charlie now, when we first met him, he was like super gung-ho about reforming Catholic education.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Martin, I know, has a really a big heart for kind of the spiritually poor, but the, financially well-to-do. Do you have like a certain thing that you're drawn to, a certain population, or are you just like, I'm a priest for all people?
No, I think part of the 7 years that is asked of us in seminary is to pray about this and to discern, because I think everyone will bring something different to the table. Like, it's our whole person, humanity that is ordained, and God wants to use it all. For me, a big part of my life has been the liturgy, has been the Mass, and then in seminary, it's been the breviary. And I think there is an urgent need in the church for Catholics to discover the power of the sacraments, and in particular, the Mass. It's in so many parishes, I find that, and I think the research has confirmed this, that there is a lack of appreciation for the fullness of the sacrament, that mm-hmm. it's truly Jesus present in the Blessed Sacrament. Things that look like bread and wine, things that look like ordinary materials, are totally not that.
Yeah.
And then that goes, and that's just like a Catholic rule of thumb. You know, the things that appear to us are signs of a deeper reality. So I'm praying about this, Alyssa. I appreciate that question, but I am also, I think I'm interested in something that is happening every single day, every single Sunday, and how can we cause it to flourish and blossom sure. In a new way, which is a question that actually is phrased wrong, because we can't cause that. but we can pray, and we can look for ways to worship the Lord with more reverence and with more beauty, and to rejoice that He's with us no matter what, in the Mass especially.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a difficult question to answer. You mm-hmm. did a great job, yeah. but in the sense that it's like you're not desiring priesthood just to like go do something super specific and super siloed. Like you're becoming a priest for souls, you know?
Right.
So,
well, I think my story connects to that in that, I grew up with a tremendous, appreciation for the sacraments, but often not being able to answer why. I knew how I love my parents more than anything. And I saw how much they loved the Mass and loved the sacrament of confession and loved the rosary. And they loved these things. But the challenge that God gave me as I became older was, Joe, do you love these things? Do you want me? You know, your parents are gonna move on, and their mission's gonna be finished. Will you serve me and love me as they did, and pass this on? And so the fact that the Mass is now for me, it's something that God is perhaps inviting me to celebrate and offer as a sacrifice for the living and the dead. I think I would have to say that's probably the number one thing I'm most excited about and most interested in receiving from the Lord. How does He want me to lead others in worship and to do so as worthily and as reverently as we can?
Beautiful.
So that's what I was given as a kid, and my life is... Yeah, my life is—it's flourished over the years, and now I sense God inviting me to give that back.
Mm. I like how you said that. That keeps coming back to me. Like, people need to understand the why. Like, mm-hmm. why are these things important?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could take them to the sacrament and say, "You have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this." Some people will just do it. The other people are like, "No, I need to know why. Why is this so important?" And I think maybe over so many years, we've kind of missed that step, and that's kind of where we need to come back. Well, you know what the sacraments are, but do you really know why?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You haven't, like baptism. We're not just throwing water on you. Like, that is the beginning of your mission.
Yes.
And like, why do you have that mission? Well, to live out God's, like, fulfill God's mission or life that He has built for you. And so I think I love that. And maybe while you're here this year, we can kind of help our parish understand more of why we do the things we do. Not just like, hey, we're offering confessions this morning.
Right.
Only for the daily Mass goers. We don't want anyone else in here.
No. Well, it's such a good question, because if we think about it, it's ordinary to us what happens at Mass here at St. Clair's and parishes across wherever, St. Louis and beyond. But why do these grown men dress up like Roman senators and walk around in this different shaped buildings, St. Clair's one shape, there's others, and they pray prayers over ordinary bread and wine, and they do this and they dedicate their lives to it. I think that's sometimes the craziness of this doesn't hit people who are accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. It would have hit those first disciples really hard, especially the ones who didn't have the Jewish background. But I agree, Shayna. I think it's a question I ask myself each day, and the answer has to be because Jesus commanded us to do it, and we're his children, and he wants us. He wants to be with us, and he wants to be with me. And that's the most powerful reason of all, and it sometimes takes a lifetime to sink in. So,
yeah. And I think, too, in terms of the liturgy, like, does the human heart not long for the beatific vision? And, yeah, when we go to Mass, it's not necessarily, it won't be, you know, like, there's no Eucharist in heaven because it's, like, he's there, you know? But that doesn't mean that we get to provide sort of our own human influences and what I, Alyssa, think would be good for the liturgy and things like that. So I think there is really a beautiful a desire that he's placed in you to make it as close to what he designed it to be as possible. Yeah. That's exciting. And I think Father Yates has a similar sort of hope. I don't know. Similar desires. So it'll be good. Anything else?
No.
Okay. The last question that we wanted to ask you was, what are you hoping to get out of this year of being a pastoral intern?
Oh, that's a great question. I really am hoping to grow in relationship with the people. I've been so impressed and so encouraged and so welcomed by the people here. And I'm looking for as many opportunities as I can to have dinner or have lunch or grab coffee.
Invite Joe over for dinner.
Yeah. I want to hear people's stories. I want to listen to them. I mean, the church has given me time more than anything. It's given me a time, an environment, and a place to be at home and a spiritual home with all of these members of the church. Mm-hmm. For me to see them, to hear their stories, and to experience how God is working in their lives. And then the idea is to take all of that back for two more years of studies at the seminary so that for those final 2 years, when everything is coming together, when the pastoral, the intellectual, the human side, the spiritual side is really coagulating, if you will, and, and there's that final call from the bishop, that call to orders, that these the truths of the faith that that are sometimes abstract in the seminary would be covered in flesh and bones from real people. That's what I am hoping for and praying for. And so I'm super excited just to be on this podcast with you guys. I know how special the Catholic arsonist is to St. Clair's, because I'll be in the foyer and people come up to Alyssa and just start, they pick up right where you guys left off, you know? Yeah, so for me, it's the what I have here and what God's given me here that isn't the same way at the seminary is people and families. And a parish is a family of families, according to John Paul II. And yeah. I am just stoked to be a part of it. So
cool. We're so glad you're here.
Yes. We're excited.
Yeah. I think that's all we have. We're at 54 minutes. I think we got to shut this down.
Yeah. Yay.
Yay.
Good.
Yeah. Thanks for being here today and, every day for the next year. I'm especially grateful Joe is helping out with youth ministry this year, amongst other things. But even just last night, he was allowing himself to be doused with colored powder by obscene amounts. So
it's the heat of battle.
It's like, the fog of war.
I think Dan, one of the core team members, he said somebody knocked into him and his watch switched on to military time. I was like, that's the smartest smartwatch I think I've ever heard of. It can sense when you're in the midst of conflict.
Incredible. I love it. All right. Anything else, Shane?
Nope.
Okay, well, we will see you all next week. Have a great, Labor Day weekend?
Yep.
Yeah, have a great Labor Day, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.